What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Reggie Adatula, Brandon Scott, in for John Lopez, Colin Neal, in for Figgy Fig. They are in the loop. Happy New Year, everybody. They start now.
And Happy New Year's Eve to you here. You are indeed in the loop on Sports Radio 610. I love the idea that Seth Payne's final words on Sports Radio 610 for the year is less wrinkly and gooey.
Yeah, it's fitting.
It does. It is.
It is fitting.
It really is.
I like that you wouldn't be able to predict what his last words would be, but also that the last words would be also predictable.
Without question.
You know what I mean?
Without question. It's one of the reasons why you got to wake up and turn it on and rock with Payne and Pendergast. Right now, you're in the loop. As you can hear, 1B Scott remains in the seat of the OG John Lopez.
It's a real kick in the junk when your co-host calls you less wrinkly and gooey, less gooey, calls a baby less gooey than you, and you've got no comeback to it.
Yeah.
I'm just gooey.
But less gooey.
Less gooey. Yeah, well, the baby's like, yeah.
That's right. And those are the final words for Sean Pendergast.
That is
a bad ending to the year for me.
And we are wrapped on the 2025 year.
Justified reaction.
Mark that, Colin. That should be a drop somewhere.
And we appreciate D&M Auto Leasing for the opportunity to crosstalk with the fellas. Let's have a day here on this Wednesday. Join in, as we always want you to do, 713-572-4610 is the number to text.
And you know what? I didn't think about this, but I wanted to congratulate Reggie on his first full calendar year.
That is true.
The 2025 is the first full calendar year of the Reginald Adatula era here at Sports Radio 610. It's been fun. I've enjoyed working with you, and congratulations, my friend.
You said that like this is going to be the only calendar year. I'm a little concerned. No, did somebody tell you something? You were like, congratulations. You made it through a whole year.
It is the end of it. I mean, we're going to start a new one. I was just trying to put a bow on it.
Should I expect to talk to the boss man when the show is over?
I think you're good with the
boss. Okay, I appreciate you.
I think the boss likes us all. We're all good with the boss. Sure.
Let me know. Am I good? 713-572-4610. That's the number to text, as always.
Parker's going
to
come running in here. Yeah, you're fine.
But also, we always appreciate the Mo Karam Andrew Lawyers for the live streams.
We keep it 100.
That's the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and the Twitch chat, 610 Houston. Those are all the ways to get involved. And sincerely, I know that I wanted to save the sappy part for later, but we really do appreciate you guys rock with us. It means a lot. I know in particular on this show, you, the listener, being involved makes it so much better. So appreciate you doing that. And B. Scott, thank you for all the different ways that you contribute to the show, including today, where you were contributing a particular feeling that it seems like you've landed on. And this happened recently that you got yourself to this place, a certain level of clarity, if you will.
Like literally this morning, maybe in the last couple of hours. So ever since the Texans jumped up in the standings and went to 5, all of us have been thinking about, okay, who's the opponent going to be? And we know the game that we're all watching, right? Pittsburgh Steelers, Baltimore Ravens. Who do you want? Do you want the Ravens? Do you want the Steelers? And I did this thing of, you know, I kind of took the, I don't know if this is the high road, but my thought was, you know, I ain't scared of none of these guys. I ain't scared of the Steelers. I ain't scared of the Ravens. Bring them on.
Ain't no punks around here.
Bring either one of them on, and I'm good with the Texans. I'll ride with the Texans in either scenario. And I still feel that way, but now I have leaned more toward one opponent than the other, and it's the Ravens. Like, it's the other team. It's not the team that everybody else and that we've all kind of agreed we want the Steelers because we don't want to face Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and the boogeyman that has been the Ravens over the last few years, the regular season game this year notwithstanding because they weren't whole. But the more and more I think about not the history, not the aesthetic or not whatever feeling you have about it, but just the matchup itself. And I feel like the Texans matchup and just the Ravens in general are a better team for this Texans team to play for a couple of reasons. Number one, I would say it's the fact that their defense is not very good and that they don't rush the passer. And I feel like you've got the best chance to score points against the Ravens. And what is your Achilles heel? What is the thing that has plagued you? What is the thing that we keep talking about every time we come in here, whether it's on a reaction Monday or by the time we get to Wednesday? It's what is this offense doing? Is this offense any good? Why are they so stagnant? I think this is the one defense out of really all of them where the passing game could get going, and even the run game, I think, can get going. And so I look at the Steelers, and the one thing that I would say is their redeeming quality is they do get after the passer a lot more so than the Ravens do, who just don't do it at all, basically. And so would I rather face an active pass rush or a dormant one? If I'm the Texans and I'm trying to get my offense going and trying to make a playoff run, I'd rather face the dormant, non-existent pass rush of the Ravens. So I've arrived at a place to where I'll take either one of these, but if I prefer one, I'm actually going to be rooting for the Ravens. I'd rather the Texans, this version of the Texans, face this version of the Ravens, history notwithstanding.
That is interesting. I think that your points are well stated. I think I still disagree with you here, and I think this is also one of those things where reasonable minds can disagree.
Yeah.
And I will come back to the first things you came with, the first place that you landed when it came to the opponent for the Texans, who have, you know, punched their spot in the Super Bowl. Like, I understand someone looking at us and going, hey, week 18 still in front of you, or Super Bowl, goodness, the playoffs. My head is somewhere else entirely. The Texans will be in the playoffs, so we can, in reasonable fashion, talk about this. I still look at it and I go, those teams are relatively similar. Like, the Steelers ain't no, they ain't no bastion of pass rushing prowess either. And we are sliding more and more week by week on the idea that TJ Watt and this lung injury continues to be a thing, right? Every week that goes by, it's like, well, nope, still no TJ Watt, still no TJ Watt. You're not that far away from the possibility of TJ Watt not playing this game. And how scared are you of that Pittsburgh Steelers team if there is no TJ Watt on the defensive line to pass rush?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it, right? Like, and I'm having a tough time making any assumptions about TJ Watt one way or the other, considering that we do have enough time between now and when they would play, and given what the injury is, like, he could just go out there and maybe be hampered and still play. But if you just look at it, they are, and TJ Watt has a lot to do with it, but they, like, if you just look at, forget sacks for a second and just look at the pass rush win rate, they are closer to being among the top teams than, say, the Ravens are. And so just kind of overall, I think that they rush the passer better than the Ravens do. They have a glimpse and a glimmer of a pass rush as opposed to the Ravens having none. And then the other side of it, like, let's forget the opponent for just a second and think about the Texans. And this is, I think, where the clarity came the most for me. And you won this part of the argument, too. You and Lopez were talking about the offensive line after one game. Was it good? Was it not? He thought it was good, and you weren't really willing to go that far. I forget which week this was, but it wasn't that long ago.
It was probably a couple weeks ago.
I think that history is going
to... Oh, it was the Cardinals game because you ran the ball really well, and I was like...
Yeah. I think history is going to be on your side on that argument, Reggie. Like, I think you are correct. The Texans offensive line, for as scrappy as it's been and for as much credit as we would like to give it, and it has felt like it's been better throughout the course of the win streak. I know this last game the tackles were hurt, but since the Trent Brown insertion and the move of Titus Howard to guard, it feels like this has been their quote-unquote best five, their best version. But and not everybody likes the win rate stat, but just
by the way, Steelers fourth in that metric over the entirety of the season.
Yeah,
to this point.
Yeah, so fourth in pass rush win rate.
Correct.
Going up against an offensive line who's still up to this point 30th in pass block win rate and worse against the run, 32nd in run block win rate. So they're toward the bottom of the league in both passing, pass blocking and run blocking against a team, more specifically in the pass blocking situation there, against a team that will get after the passer. So give me that. Give me C.J. Stroud in a comfortable pocket as opposed to trying to figure it out and, you know, in a messy pocket or them having to deal with pressure. Like, we talk about pressure. We've seen times earlier in the season where they would have max protect and couldn't deal with the three-man rush. Thinking about the Jaguars game earlier in the season, they've just had issues in protection throughout the course of the season. This is a team that can do it. The Ravens are not. Give me the Ravens.
And so, like, the aspirational debate champion in me wants to, like, go to the place where you go, oh, man, but if that's the case, why not want to see the Steelers in giving you a little bit of a test in that way, a little bit of a more fortification there? But I'm like, we this far into this. It's not changing Wait. By your divisional round game, giving you a test in that regard to prepare you, to steal you for that. It's just a problem.
Come on,
and
man.
And so I'm with you in that regard. I just cannot shake the possibility of having, if you talk about having something that could explode, something that could go off in a game, the Steelers don't got it for me.
No, they
like,
don't.
I just don't see the place where I go, this could be explosive. That is an offense who, they just lost Darnell Washington this week, and I don't know how long, to be fair, but they don't really have much in the way of either side of that team where I go, oh, this is explosive. That is a milquetoast-ass team. This is very average, very regular in a lot of different ways. The Ravens are incredibly chaotic, right? Like, it definitely can look really bad. We've seen that over the course of this season. But also, in their moments and their flashes, it could show up against anybody. And I would like to mitigate that, because the thing that scares me the most about this Texans team as of right now is that they have decided that the way that they win games is this very narrow path where the defense is locked down and the offense gives you enough. And the thing that I've been very afraid of is what if you find the one moment where somebody goes supernova and you're enough ain't enough. And that's one of those things that I don't think that the Ravens can actually get there, to be entirely honest, because I don't want to be dishonest academically or intellectually, rather, in this moment. I don't think the Ravens can do it, but they have the plausibility is within there, and I'd like to avoid that.
Yeah, I know all of us can appreciate academics, but I don't need no more tests. You know what I mean? I feel like they've done all of the testing that I've got the patience for. I thought on the road against Kansas City was a decent test. I thought even before that at home, Thursday night football again with Davis Mills quarterbacking for you against the Buffalo Bills was a decent test. I think this Chargers game that they just won and we had our complaints about was a pretty decent test. So they are a battle-tested team, particularly throughout this 8-game stretch of winning, right? So I'm with that. But, man, I keep – you know, the down-the-middle take is actually – and I've done this. I did this on my podcast. I think that
– B-Block podcast, wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, check that out on YouTube and wherever else you get your podcast. But to me – if you are the Texans offense, you'd rather face the Ravens. If I'm on the Texans defense, I'd rather face this version of Aaron Rodgers and, to your point, this non-threatening Steelers offense.
Especially because how do you answer this from the 8-2? You were forgetting about Derrick Henry, the dude who just put up his seventh, 200, some a whole bunch of yards.
Yeah, no, I'm not forgetting about him. And look, Derrick Henry is much more of a game breaker than anybody that the Steelers have. That's a fair point, and he absolutely could wreck a game or be the reason why the Texans lose. But it's not like I've never seen them perform well against Derrick Henry recently, and it's not like they're not very good against the run, which is something that we can perhaps talk about later. But they have improved a lot against the run, and they have shown that they can keep Derrick Henry relatively in check. Like, if you want to go way in the way back machine, yeah, Derrick Henry has owned the Texans historically. More so recently, and specifically with this defense, I think they're equipped to handle it. So I'm not as afraid of it now as I would have been, let's say, a year ago.
I would like to throw my final Hail Mary here to try and get you on board here. Would you just like to wipe that smug look off of Aaron Rodgers' face? Be the final death knell in his career?
Yes is the short answer. Yes. Yes, I would.
I feel like that alone, give me that for the Steelers.
I want to see
his, you know that moment where his helmet goes up and he looks all disheveled?
Yeah.
I want that. I want Will Anderson Jr. to hit him, his helmet to go up, him look like he needs to retire and then walk off into the sunset.
And to that point, I reiterate, bring me either one of these Texans and I'm taking the Texans. Let's go. Let's go 2026.
That's right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Just getting going on this New Year's Eve edition of the program. Always get involved. 713-572-4610. Coming up next, where do the Rockets actually stand in the West? We could look at the standings, but I feel like there's a deeper level to look at. So I kind of want to do a little evaluation of where the Rockets are with B. Scott. We'll do that next.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez and Reggie Atitula. Always live, always local.
So what do I do? Just take a nose hit?
Just take a good whiff of that.
It's my first. God almighty.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Yeah, in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. We continue on a New Year's Eve edition of the program. I'm Reginald Atatula. You got B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez and Colin Neal on the ones and twos once again. For
super producer Colin.
That's right. I keep forgetting that that's there. Shout out to ND for that.
Super producer, man. Get it right.
Super. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not doing that. Come on.
ND did it for you.
And so. Yeah, look, ND is a bigger name and personality than I am. I think that's the real win here, if we're going to be entirely honest. But you, also getting involved with the program, 713-572-4610, the way to get involved. Where the Rockets stand in the West, it's been a question that I've been pondering for a little while, especially when you consider that this year, and maybe it was a little bit last year, especially in February when they really started hitting their groove, and you go, ooh, this might be a thing. I was like, this team is crossing the Rubicon into the place where they are no longer a team to be judged by 82. They're a team to be judged by 16. And that is a way of saying what they do in the regular season and the record, I think, is less impactful on the way that you judge them versus what they do and what they are capable of doing in the playoffs. And so that makes it weird judging where the Rockets are right at this moment, because we could look at them and say that they're fourth in the West. We could look at them and say, that they've, you know, had some struggles against some poor teams in December. But I want to kind of take this to another level, B. Scott, which I know you are very capable of as you do all sorts of Rockets things all around the city. Where do they actually stand in the West and in the league? Especially when we talk about that possibility of being a nuisance, being a menace in the playoffs at this moment.
Yeah, I think it is right where a lot of us thought it was going into the season, and that's somewhere situated clearly behind Oklahoma City and the Denver Nuggets. Both of those teams have played, and I would even put the Rockets right there as well, have played right up to about expectation. Like, if you had asked me this question, and we're doing it here on New Year's Eve going into 2026, but if you'd asked me this question right before the season started, I would have said, matter of fact, I think somebody actually did. I was at a Rockets game. DJ Bieniemy for some reason was there. Maybe this was at a Texans practice. But either way, DJ Bieniemy, who covers the Texans for ESPN, also a basketball fan, was like, hey, man, what do you think? This is basically this exact question. Like, think the Rockets are for real? Where do you think they rank? I'm like, man, they're somewhere behind Oklahoma City and Denver. And despite the fact that the standings right now have both Denver and the Rockets behind the Spurs, so it's Oklahoma City and it's the Spurs who look up and have beaten Oklahoma City not once, not twice, but three times this year already, okay? Once in the cup and then two normal regular season games.
That's right.
And two of them that were relatively close together and convincing. I still have the Rockets right there behind. So I would reorder this and go, instead of the actual standings of Thunder, Spurs, Nuggets, Rockets, I would go Thunder, Nuggets, Rockets, Spurs. I still feel like that is the order, that is the hierarchy. And a lot of it has to do with some of the stuff that we were celebrating yesterday with Kevin Durant. Okay. Like that to me, just to oversimplify it, has been the fixer for a lot of what ailed the Rockets offensively. And then the fact that their defense has picked up. Now it has its inconsistencies, but when you look at them on both ends of the floor, I feel like they are the most complete team, not named Oklahoma City. And then Denver is just a menace offensively. I know Jokic is hurt right now, but he just kind of changes the calculus for everything. But after that, I think it's Oklahoma City, then Houston as the most complete team, but then Denver squeezed in between the two of them because they have Jokic and an offense that is, at points this season, has been historically good.
Yeah, but Jokic out for at least a month with the hyperextended knee. We mentioned that yesterday. Yeah,
and that changes some things.
It changes some things. I think it changes the regular season standings of it. I don't think it changes what we're talking about here.
Right.
Now, and I think this is what I was trying to say yesterday, and I don't know how good of a job I did of it. Because this does not appear, at least, to be one of those major injuries that takes him away from the team, like, for a more permanent stretch. Like, one of those, oh, here's an ACL for, you know, 9 to 10 months, something like that. Because this is one something like that, and because of the particular style of his game, I don't think that this changes the way that they play basketball. I think this actually offers them an opportunity to continue to lean into some of the younger guys that need to be a part of their rotation. But that's more Denver talk. I really think that you have honed in on the portion of this, the underlying question in this question, which is, Where do the Rockets compare with the Spurs? Because the Spurs appear to be significantly further along in their development process than we had anticipated. And it is not just because they got the 7'5 freak dude over there. The likes of Dylan Harper has come along incredibly quickly. The likes of, obviously, Stephon Castle. The benefit, I've been saying this in the CP3 range where people are talking about him and like, oh, man, I don't know about him being a veteran, experience giver type dude. And it's like, oh, well, look at Stephon Castle because that is a CP3 joint right there.
Yeah.
But even still, I think that they're great defensively as a team. They've got some vets in there. But I do wonder if experience is one of the places where they pale in comparison to the Rockets, where you have Kevin Durant. And then some of the other staples that are younger have also at least garnered the Golden State Warriors series last year.
Yeah, I think that is the main part that's keeping a lot of people, myself included, and I'll just speak for myself here. That's what's keeping me from believing in the Spurs. I thought actually Charles Barkley did a good job on Christmas Day. You know, they had all the games, right? ABC, ESPN, and of course Inside the NBA is with them now. So they were on all day. And I thought, you know, they get a lot of flack for being, you know, not enough substantive basketball talk. But I thought he did a really good job of pointing out the thing about the Spurs that makes them unique and dangerous. He qualified it by saying, I don't know or don't think that they're ready to win a championship yet. Right. And mm-hmm. And that speaks to the youth. And so I just reiterate that point. But what they do have, obviously, Wimby, that matters. But then on top of that, just serious, serious guard play on both ends of the floor. You mentioned Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper, the rookie. Stephon Castle being the rookie of the year last year and Dylan Harper, the number two overall pick, who's been really good for them this year. You ain't even get to De'Aaron Fox
off the bench.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they've got guards galore, it feels like. Vassell, like they've just got so many guys that can get it done on both ends of the floor that it does make them a legitimate threat and it does make them legitimately scary. But I still lean toward the experience, the defense, the length that the Rockets have. And then I'm not even leaving room for, I haven't even talked about, well, what if the Rockets figure out the point guard thing? What if the Rockets start shooting more threes, and they're already shooting them well, they just shoot the least amount of anybody.
Correct.
What if that number ticks up and they become a little bit more of a prolific offense on top of what they're already doing? I think they'll really be cooking with grease at that point.
How do you rank those things that you just mentioned in power ranking in the possibility of them happening, the probability even? Because when you said figuring out the point guard thing, I actually continue to view that as the most far-fetched, like fully fledged answer. The best answer in my mind, and of course, what do I know? But the best answer in my mind to this point is the little scuttlebutt and hopium that's been dropped out there that, hey, maybe Fred VanVleet comes back in March or something, right? I think that's actually the most plausible answer that I've seen, because as of right now, it feels like it's just get the ball into the best player's hands and hope that they don't turn the ball over.
Yeah, no, you asked me to rank them. I would say that the whole thing is hopium. Like, whether I...
Oh, shooting more threes?
No. I'm sorry. The point guard part.
Okay.
The whole point guard aspect of it is hoping him, whether no matter which side of it is, whether it's the Fred VanVleet return or the continued development of Reed Shepherd, at this point, I think you're just hoping that either one of those guys can actually be or fill that void that you have right now. So if I'm going to rank them, I'm going to put that below the three-point thing, which I think they can absolutely do. They're getting good looks. They're just not, to me, shooting enough of them. They have enough guys who are capable that can shoot them. So I think that part is, if I was ranking them, the much more likely of the two. You know, much more likely to shoot more threes and be good at it than, say, Fred VanVleet comes back from the ACL or Reed Shepherd turns into this bona fide point guard, which, you know, I am high on, but mm-hmm. also realistic about. Like, you know, you only got but so much time for that to happen.
I also like that you're seeing guys come back to the fold or come to the fold that are going to provide an actual opportunity for growth, which is the defense. Even as it's solidified now, there's a possibility of getting more solid. I think that I have been probably really loud on this one thing with the Rockets, which is who is the defensive floor general? Who is the kind of communication hub? I think that one of the most encouraging things that I've seen, and for this particular player, it actually hasn't been all that encouraging in this first few games. Dorian Finney-Smith has already proved to be like, oh, this could be the answer. Because... The shot has been so-so very early, but he's a guy who very much needs to get into his rhythm with that. he hasn't looked as spry, but of course that makes sense. He's coming off of a lower body injury, and he's still getting himself. Like, he ain't played with this team for real before.
Dude had surgery.
Yes.
Yeah, ankle surgery.
He's still figuring out what it is to play with this team. But immediately what I saw, and this was Christmas Day versus the Lakers, I'm seeing him point dudes in different directions in defense, and I'm like, that's what I've been looking for.
Yeah.
Like, that's what takes you to give you the opportunity to be a lockdown, scary defense in this league. And they haven't been that yet this year while also still being one of the better offensive teams in the year. I think that's the thing that could take them in a place where maybe we could put them alongside the Thunder and Nuggets and really view them as really sitting in that category of championship contender in the West.
Yeah, your most attentive Rockets minds have pointed out them missing Dylan Brooks this year. I think we've even talked about it. The thing that we probably haven't thought enough about because he hasn't played up until now is that Dorian Finney-Smith was kind of going to be that replacement.
Mm-hmm.
I think functionally, you know, they're not the exact same player by any stretch, but functionally, and to the point of this conversation, I think he was supposed to be that replacement. As he gets his legs under him, I think we'll start to see that. And then the idea, we talked about this yesterday, that you can have any combination of these three guys, of Dorian Finney-Smith, Tari Eason, and Amen Thompson out there defending the best perimeter players on the best team, any combination, two of the three guys, is a real luxury for this team.
I keep forgetting to ask you, like, where you are right now with Amen. I need to, because he has been better. such an interesting, I don't know, just anomaly? Is that the right word?
Enigma
is the word that I've been looking for.
Real quick, he's just missing. He had been missing too many bunnies for my liking. For as well as he was playing, my chief concern and issue, I would say there were two. Missing too many bunnies and not knocking down enough of those open shots. I understand he's not a shooter, but they're wide open. They're baiting you into taking them. And if you're going to be as aggressive taking them, you got to hit more of them than you do. Wasn't hitting enough open shots despite the fact that he's not known as a shooter. And he was missing bunnies, ones that he's supposed to make. I feel like he's played a lot better as of late.
Maybe he ends up being a portion of this when we get to 1 o'clock and we do our New Year's resolutions for the Houston sports teams.
It's a tease.
Yeah, that's what we call in the business of tease. Right. But right now, In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to our question of the day. Resolutions is one thing. What do you know is going to happen? Can you give me your bold predictions, any and all of them, for the upcoming year in Houston sports? 713-572-4610. And make sure they're bold. I want that. Next.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us on this New Year's Eve. 713-572-4610. I was about to ask a question, but I forgot it's question of the daytime. I can't be throwing out two different questions to talk about in this moment.
Yeah, don't confuse the people.
No, I think our people are capable of handling, you know, walking and chewing gum at the same time. I just feel like that is not fair to do to them. So let me just throw out the question of the day then.
At the head and rub the tummy
there you
at the same time.
There you go. Bold prediction, baby. What is your bold prediction for the upcoming year in Houston sports? Yesterday, we took the opportunity to look back at our favorite moments. Now, see if you can go ahead and put in the call for your upcoming favorite moment, or maybe not favorite moment, depending on how you go for it. 713-572-4610 is the number to text. Go ahead and get bold with it, baby. What's your bold prediction for the upcoming year?
My bold prediction is definitely not going to be a favorite moment if it actually happens. All right. And so here we are. The Astros will trade either Jose Altuve or Yordan Alvarez. One of those two players will not be on the team, let's say this time next year when we do this again, or by the end of the MLB season. That's either Yordan Alvarez or Jose Altuve will have played their last game as an Astro by the end of the year.
Starting out bold. I love
that
it, B. Scott. And you know what's funny? I don't think that is too wild. It is pretty wild, especially because Jose Altuve is the greatest Astro, at least of our lifetimes,
I would go as far to say of all to the guy has three batting titles,
a couple of World Series. He culturally he carries this thing. They have made it abundantly clear that they are going to go to great lengths to make sure that he is here for the remainder of his career. However, you are looking at an infield where it is getting more and more untenable. We are seeing the decline happen in a way that it is starting to happen a little quicker than I think we at least hoped. Because there was reason when he got that contract. We weren't like, oh, this is just going to be, you know, this is going to be fine. We're like, well, you have to do it because of X, Y, and Z, most of that being who he is and what he means to your franchise.
Correct.
Could they reach a point where they go, actually, we need to be more pragmatic? Sure. I think the pragmatic answer would be the other one that you're talking about here.
Yeah, Yordan.
Yeah, Yordan creates a lot of issues while also being a terrifying hitter. How much does that matter if he's unable to be healthy?
Yeah.
How much does that matter if you get to a place where you're like, we need to open up that DH spot for the other dude?
Yeah.
And the place where he can actually still be useful for us? And if you were to, let's say, make a trade, because I imagine that you would want to get something back for either of these. I don't think this would be a walkout situation or something to that effect. I think that he brings back the most of the two that we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's clearly it. And the conflict I think we all understand is that you've got two guys that are incredibly important to your franchise, have contributed a great deal to winning, but there's only one DH spot in the lineup, and neither of them ideally should be playing defense at this point. Like, you don't want regular Yordan Alvarez appearances in left field. And they tried the left field thing with Jose Altuve last year, and we saw how they quietly sort of abandoned that toward the end of the season. But there was also a reason why they did it in the first place, because they didn't trust him all that much at second base. How much of a liability is he still, or will he be at second base? I think we're going to get a chance to find that out this season. But when it comes down to it, it's just a math problem. You got two guys and really one spot to put both of them in the lineup. And you can't fit two into one. Somebody's got to go. Something's got to give. And to the point that you just made about Yordan Alvarez, this is kind of twofold. Jose Altuve is the franchise icon, to the point that you made earlier. Like, this is the best player in franchise history. And so there's a symbolic value that goes with that. And then the other side of it, which is probably the more relevant point, especially for Astros fans, is that Yordan Alvarez is at least a younger player, a more prolific hitter at this point, especially when he's healthy. And so the idea is that he would yield you more than, say, Jose Altuve, who is my age. So that is the – so it seems like it would be more likely to be Yordan, both because of the return and because of what Jose Altuve represents to the franchise.
If this were to happen, and mind you, people on the text line are already sharpening their pitchforks and lighting their stakes or what have you.
I did qualify right now.
I did qualify it by saying I didn't like it. But the prediction's supposed to be bold, and that's what it is.
Yeah, if this were to actually happen, and one of these guys, and I think we've settled on the possibility of Yordan. Mind you, these are bold predictions for the 2026 year in Houston sports. Do not come at me. If that was to happen, at what point? Because in my mind, if they had the temerity, if Dana Brown just had the big old cojones to decide this needed to happen, it would be smart to do it sooner rather than later before the season, because trading one of them fixes a logjam that right now it feels like you're going to have to make a move in order to fix. Where you talk about, where do we play Carlos Correa and Isak Paredes and Christian Walker? Well, if Yordan Alvarez is traded for more talent that I imagine would be able to play in the field somewhere, that creates an opportunity for you to platoon Carlos Correa and Isak Paredes or something and keep the dudes who have been your best hitters more consistently on this team on this team.
Yeah, but to the point of doing it earlier, I agree with you, like, on the surface level, but I do see how the Astros could convince themselves, hey, let's give ourselves a shot at it, a run at it, to kind of at least figure it out, do a lot of what the Texans are doing, just recoil straight up at the idea that you would get rid of either one of these guys, go give it an honest effort, give it a try, but think about it, in the crosstalk, what was Sean Pendergast's bold prediction, that the Astros would finish third? Okay, let's play that out for a second and say, approaching the trade deadline in 2026, they are third in the AOS standings. Okay, now what do you do when you're facing down the barrel of back-to-back years of missing the postseason and being an inferior team in your own division, which is not all that strong, particularly strong to begin with. Then you got to start making some real, start having some real honest conversations about where you stand in the overall landscape and what your future looks like. And then how do you, what is the route? How do you go about going from here to there? And it's going to cost you. You know, it's not like you've got the greatest farm system or really ever have. And so how do you get there? And Yordan Alvarez might be your best way to try and do that, unfortunately, because I don't want to see either one of these guys go. I want to be clear about that. I rock with the Astros. I rock with both of those players. But we are at a, right now, I think, at an inflection point. And then at some point, you're going to reach a crossroads, I do believe.
How do you like that? Because somebody in, you know, tagging on to what you've put up here for your bold prediction that you're either Yordan Alvarez or Jose Altuve will not be on this team by this time next year. They said that the prediction is that neither of them will be traded, but Altuve will retire at season's end. How likely does that feel? Because he feels like a dude who you're going to have to pull him off the field.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see him retiring because he can still swing the stick, and I think he can still make pretty good money as a DH. Mm-hmm. Like he could be this team's DH. You know, the dilemma only exists because Yordan Alvarez is on the team, and it'd be great if one of those guys could just play in the field, and then that would allow the other one to be a DH. And it would make sense if, say, the younger guy could do it, Yordan, and it just hasn't quite worked out that way because both he's not great at it and he's not healthy enough, you know, and so you want to preserve said health and give him fewer chances to be injured, right? So, like, you want to mitigate the or even eliminate the possibility that he and Jeremy Pena could collide in the outfield, or he and Jake Myers or whoever's in center field could collide in the outfield. You don't want that to happen. So, yeah, it is a conundrum. I will say that. It is definitely a conundrum.
Another bold prediction that came through, we will be in downtown with a parade. Obviously, there's a lot of people that go to a lot of different teams. Which one do you feel like is the most likely? Which parade?
Oh, most likely? Ooh, the Texans.
Okay.
The Texans.
Because I was like, I thought there was an argument to be made for the Rockets there.
I think there is an argument to be made for the Rockets. I think it's just, I believe in the top of the West and the NBA by proxy, because the top of the NBA is the West. I believe in that more so than I believe in the top of anything in the NFL. Like, I like the Texans' chances against any NFL team better than I like the Rockets' chances against, say, any combination of Oklahoma City and Denver.
Another bold prediction. And this one I find to be fascinating because I don't think that it inherently has to mean what you would think it means. From the 832, bold prediction, CJ doesn't get a second contract
that is
with
bold.
The Texans.
That is bold because I think that's just going to happen.
I do as well. I do wonder, though, and this would go contrary to the way that Nick Casario has handled his business recently, but I do wonder, would they wait on doing the contract and not do it next year? You know, because like the thought process is it's available to happen next year, and so you just do it next year, right? But there is the possibility that you hold on and do it in the year after. Is there not?
It is possible, but I think you're dealing with, at that point, some real dangerous terrain at
Certainly.
That point. Like, you've got a quarterback that's led you to the playoffs three straight years, and it's the first time it's ever happened in your franchise's history. They make it a point to note every time CJ passes some kind of franchise mark for quarterbacks. And it's not like they've had a ton of quarterbacks in their franchise history, but he is quickly climbing and he's only had 3 years to do so. Like, everything about his career at this point leads to second contract, and to kick the can down the road and to wait feels like it would be dangerous.
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of like the relationship and the vibe around the building, I think they would want to get that taken care of.
There's more bold takes. Keep sending them in. Let's do this all day long if you don't mind. 713-572-4610. Your bold takes for the year coming in Houston sports. We didn't get any Cougs takes because there's some really juicy ones that you could throw out here college football wise.
Yeah.
With the University of Houston Cougars. Like, there's a lot of different places that you could go.
Cougs in the playoffs next year?
I don't know that I go there. I do wonder if, well, actually,
that's bold.
I was going to say, if you go with Cougs winning the Big 12, is that not the place where they go into the playoff?
Fair enough.
That would
that's
be
how they get in.
And that is not all that outside. That's not that wild of a possibility. Texas Tech put a whole bunch of money in this year.
Yeah.
Does that sustain? Does that hold them? Who at the top of the Big 12 are you really afraid of? And Utah just lost their 21-year head coach to go to Michigan. Like, There's possibilities. There's plausibilities in here.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. How great would that be? U of H in the playoffs, how far they would have come. Even at the Texas Bowl over the weekend, I was thinking about, man, I, as a kid, I could not have imagined this. LSU and U of H playing a relevant football game. So, yeah, man, it's good times for them.
Okay. We'll keep those coming. We'll talk about that as we continue on in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. But coming up next, let's go around the NFL where the modern era candidates for the Hall of Fame has created a debate on NFL Twitter, and I'd like to bring it to you, B. Scott. Let's do that next.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.